Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. The Score!
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
You know what? Brad Pitt, you're a good actor. You're a movie star. You're more of a movie star than a great actor. And that's okay, because you're in really good movies and I enjoy them.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
And as long as that ends up being the case, hey, Bishop, I'm still on the radio.
No, it's all right. He can hang.
Paw Patrol.
I need another Paw Patrol.
Okay, I'm going to come turn it on in just a couple of moments, all right?
Big and Herron.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
With Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Anthony Herron is sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the plumbing professionals. Available 24-7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. And by Busey Bank. Building business, growing wealth since 1868. Anthony Herron is on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. You can find him on Twitter at Big Ant Herron, analyst for The Score, for Fox 32, for Big Ten Network. Any electrical device or appliance you have in your home will have Anthony Herron on it talking football.
I'm pretty sure you could just say, like, Alexa, Ant Herron, and he would be talking about something, right?
No, starting in September, if you toast an English muffin,
yes,
the toaster oven will have Anthony Herron talking about football. It's really my Keurig today. I went over, I used my Keurig, I got a nice cup of coffee. There's Anthony Herron talking about defensive line play. It's really spectacular. So here he is. Hello, handsome. How are you?
Hello. Yes, all the tablets, all the toaster ovens, mm-hmm. you name it. If there is football to be discussed, I am there for you. And there's plenty to talk about after late last night.
Yeah, there's football to be discussed and football to be disgusting, and that would be the Bears' offense. How close to crisis is this in your mind?
Only because we're two games in, I shudder to think we are close to crisis at this point. But man, there's a lot to correct. So much is so new that right now I'm willing to give them the deference of an assumption of development, mm-hmm. because you have the rookie quarterback and the top 10 receiver with the banged up knee and an offensive coordinator working with this collection of talent for the first time and an offensive line that's had folks being pieced in and out throughout the preseason here, and you know, a couple of quality opponents. Now they don't get to divisional play until the second half of the season here, but I would imagine that most folks thought if the Bears two games in are 1-1, then they're in good shape. But 1-1 with an offense looking like this, you know, that yes, it's worthy of concern. But I'm not at a point where I'm thinking it's catastrophic or panic time or anything yet. But there's some stuff to fix, man. There definitely is.
And when you say stuff to fix, it's interesting because you can look at a lot of different things and say it's not going well on offense. There's a lot of different parts of that are not going well. So I ask you, Ant, where would you start? Like, what's the number one? Like, if they had to prioritize, this has to be fixed this week going down to Indianapolis, what would it be?
So, Marshall, after the very first game last year, which was year two for Matt Eberflus, year two for Luke Getsy as his offensive coordinator, I sat with Dan and Lawrence, and I told him on that Monday that Matt Eberflus needed to have a hard conversation with his offensive coordinator at that point last year. Now, the difference was where Luke Getsy had been a part of accumulating the talent that had been acquired on the offense up to that point, and he had a lot more data points on what suited that personnel in his offensive system and what suited his quarterback in year three in the NFL for Justin Fields at that point. So that, to me, was what that hard conversation needed to be about between Eberflus and Getsy, because the offense just wasn't marrying up with what actually gave the personnel an opportunity for success. Shane Waldron, I do think there's still a figuring out phase, a feeling out phase that I'm willing to give him some grace on for now. There were moments in the game last night where trying to get the offensive line going, trying to get him out of first gear then, you know, how do you go about that? Do you allow them to come downhill and run the ball at the opponent? All right, you get hit with a negative run on first down, so now you're sort of forced into drop back pass mode. And against some opponents, like if you're facing Will Levis, it's a little easier to say, you know what, maybe we keep things constrained and we go with maybe a, you know, we're gonna play it close to the vest and go with a punt and pin sort of ideal on the drive where we back them up. That's C.J. Stroud you're facing. That's some of the best offensive personnel in the NFL surrounding one of the best young quarterbacks we've ever watched spin the pill. So that's a different sort of dichotomy as a head coach. So you do need to figure out, how do we move the ball? How do we put points on the board? You can't go into it saying we're going to allow this thing to be constrained if we want to try to come out here with a win. But you got your quarterback struggling to hear. You got the O-line looking confused. So my biggest concern, out of a variety of concerns with that offensive line, they too frequently looked confused by Houston. Confused by – it's one thing to not go into the game expecting the percentage of blitz that you face from that opponent – but the technique just seemed off too frequently. You got multiple interior offensive linemen. Yes, we're all mad at Nate Davis because he's missing practice. Tevin Jenkins is burying his head on Coleman Shelton, the center. Coleman Shelton is burying his backside on the ground anytime he collides with a defender. And yes, Nate Davis is doing the same thing as well, where preferably as an offensive lineman, especially one of the interior guys, because as a defensive lineman, what we want to do, we want to make the O-line overreact. So whether it's a twist stunt with the down lineman or if we have a game coming with a delayed blitz, like they used a number of delayed blitzes from the second level with the Texans last night, you want to get one or multiple of those offensive linemen to really be occupied. You want a two-for-one as a defensive lineman and get multiple guys occupied with you and then not allow someone else to become the looper or the delayed blitzer where the offensive line is occupied with his upper body, with his hands, with his shoulders, with his head. Once you see that lineman get his face mask into a defensive lineman, that allows that opportunity to now create a short corner for that looper who's going to come around or for that blitzer who's coming on what essentially turns into a green dog. That happened so frequently last night. That's very correctable from a technique perspective. It surprises me how frequently that happened in the game last night. Yeah, maybe you didn't rep it a bunch in practice, but that's one of those kind of basic would be an overstatement, but that's a part of the consistent training of an offensive line, how you pass off stunts.
Go get them, Anthony, because the stuff that was going on was not that complicated. These were simple, what they call TE twists, you know, tackle end twists. And like you say, a green dog blitz is a recognition by a linebacker that, oh, my guy isn't necessarily releasing into the pattern. Right. I might as well go attack the quarterback. You know, they're just looking at what the Bears are doing and making their decisions.
And as that's playing out in game, I mean, you know, the Bears offensive line had a rough day in pass protection and in run blocking, but then the style of run play, you know, how do you want to try and attack the opponent with your run game? And of course, you know, Caleb Williams is a very different quarterback and athlete than Justin Fields. And so there's times last year we're looking at like Flus, convince Getsy to get some QB run going, convince Getsy to get the pocket on the move. You know, Caleb is excellent throwing the ball on the run, but where his legs can be a weapon is more so to be utilized as a passer. So would I've liked to see the pocket move a little bit more last night? Yeah, I mean, but you've got great edges to that Houston defense, so it is more difficult to call him into pocket movement with that. And I really liked a lot of what I saw from Caleb from within the pocket. I mean, especially the pre-snap phase, because you go into a game like that in one of the more hostile environments that the Bears will face this season, with that volume of crowd, with the biggest stage in sports in many ways, and the biggest stage in television in his second NFL game, his first start. And I really thought he looked as composed as you could hope for a young quarterback to look in trying to diagnose pre-snap. The clock is ticking. He's going up, communicating with the center, with multiple offensive linemen. He's trading backs from the near set to the far set. He's bringing motions here and there. Maybe Shane Waldron in that environment at a certain point in the game, you take a little bit of that off the plate from the QB, maybe give me one motion, go out there, get the guys lined up, and just kind of let them roll a little bit. So again, that's kind of, you know, in retrospect, looking at it and saying what could have been done differently. But I did like how Caleb operated with the pre-snap phase of things. And on the whole, I thought he was He was quicker and more decisive last night on the road against an excellent defense than he was at home in week one, when there was a lot less noise and sort of calamity being thrown at him during this.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Snap.
Is that taking it back to basics then? You know, we talk about KISS, one of my favorite acronyms of all time, Keep It Simple, Stupid. Like, It sounds like maybe they're trying to do a little too much with what they have, and especially with a rookie quarterback, or am I oversimplifying things when I say that?
It depends, because the players didn't execute it well. So that's a part of the issue, where that's the resume for the coach. That's what's on film. And so the game last night ends up looking like, for whatever reason, your offensive line wasn't prepared, not just physically, because, you know, Coleman Shelton getting run over by big people, like that's
man,
just going to happen.
Wait a second. When does he get, when does he face the small people?
Yeah. When do the small people come in? That's what I want to know, too.
But at least when
this
that
will all
happens.
Be fine once when the small happens, people start running out.
The Lilliputians. I didn't see the Lilliputians on the schedule,
yes,
though.
Let's have Coleman Shelton look like Gulliver at some point. I'm down for that. But even aside from that, when at least he looks like he knows who to block, then I'll take that as a win in those scenarios. That's where the mental aspect of it too frequently looked like an issue. And even in the passing game and the route combinations, having your quarterback and your receivers frequently look like they're not on the same page. That's where the results of last night would indicate that maybe, and it's not even always as simple as paring the playbook down, but the way you go about sight adjustments, the amount of audibles that you'll build into an individual play, does that just condense some of that clutter if there's not as much of that going in? You know, if you have a half dozen different safety valves built into things, then perhaps there's just too many options that can be there for how you adjust in certain scenarios. Like what I loved, I mean, the first interception that he's throwing, DJ Moore is one-on-one. I think it was a 3-by-1 set. DJ Moore is one-on-one on the backside of the formation against a remarkably talented young corner in Derek Stingley. Caleb recognizes that, but it does look like. Now, why was the pass a little bit off? What was it a little bit off? Because Caleb has overthrown multiple receivers on some deep shots this season. So he's like, all right, let me put a little bit more loft and touch on this thing and just give my guy a chance to go up and get it. It looks like because DJ takes an initial inside release where Caleb is trying to fit the football towards his inside shoulder, giving DJ Moore an opportunity to maintain that position. And then Derek Stingley, just an amazingly talented corner, becoming a far more productive one as well, is able to undercut DJ Moore, go get that ball. But is the spacing a little bit off because DJ's expecting the ball in a different position than where it went? Or is that just Caleb missing on the pass? But I did at least like that recognition. Formation is here. Matchup is there. Let me hit my back foot and give my playmaker a chance to go get it. In game two, for a young quarterback, to me, I know generational talent and all these other things, but for me, a rookie quarterback who knows where he wants to go with the ball and doesn't look confused as he's taking the snap from center, I like the repetitive nature of Caleb seemingly knowing where he wants to go with it.
The old adage is, if you can't block them, screen them.
Yes.
And we were talking about this with Matt Bowen on Thursday, where he said, you know, used to have draw plays in there too, but the draw isn't run all that much anymore. Bears tried to run a couple screen plays and never got traction. There was one, I thought they caught him, but it looked like Caleb hurried the little dump off pass to Swift. And it was the same play, I believe, that they ran in the preseason that we thought was a no look.
Right.
That he said, no, it wasn't a no look. I believe that was exactly the same play. Why can't, if they're coming free like that, why shouldn't the screen game be there all night, and why couldn't they connect?
It was funny where there was a point where, you know, I had Bears Game Night Live after the game last night. So I started off with the pregame show in the morning that we do at Fox 32. And I hung out in the city and went to the Chicago Sky game in the afternoon yesterday. And I'm over at the station watching the game. And then myself and Luke Kanellis and Tina Wynn were on post game last night. As we're sitting there watching the game, there's a point where I'm forgetting exactly what series it was in the second quarter. but where, you know, the Bears just couldn't block anybody. Caleb takes a snap from center. He's running around. He's trying to do his thing. Mm-hmm. The offensive line is overmatched. But it was like a 3rd and 9 where every pass pattern went beyond the sticks. So Caleb gets the snap, and he's looking and just trying to wait for the routes to develop. And no route has developed yet by the time he's already under siege from that Houston defensive front. And so, yes, he takes a sack. But that's an example, because the discussion comes up, you know, pretty frequently in football parlance when a guy has a reception on 3rd down and he catches the ball short of the sticks. That's usually built into those scenarios because you at least want the opportunity for a pass completion, especially in a scenario where you can't block the other team. And the Bears couldn't block Houston last night. I did like the fact that Shane Waldron, from that point forward, you infrequently saw some of these opportunities, especially on 3rd downs, where there wasn't at least a safety valve. And he did immediately from that point go to more quick game. And my producer last night, as I'm kind of yelling at the TV about that 3rd and 9, and I tweeted about it real quick. And I'm saying, they got to get some quick game going. Get the ball to DJ Moore outside the numbers. I don't care who's on him. Just throw it to him if you see a matchup and let him go to work after the catch. There's so much presence between the tackles. Houston is overwhelming the Bears' pass protection, whether you go max protect or not.
But what do you call that route? Is it a whip route, a snap? The one where DJ Moore...
Oh, the one where DJ... Yes,
yeah,
yes,
where he whip route. It's where he starts inside and then just gets the guy on skates. If they can't,
and then it's over.
If they can't stop it, run it again.
And when they show man, then yes, that opportunity is to do it. Even that, though, does take a moment to develop, and usually as a quarterback, you're going to eyeball that receiver on the whip route because you want to make sure he wins on that end cut, sells that well before he goes outside, because if you miss, then that's a pick six. So the eyes of the quarterback tend to dart over there even a little bit earlier than you know what you would like for that purpose. So the ball gets held just kind of a millimoment longer than some of the other pass patterns. But you know, my producer thought I was kind of a soothsayer because I'm like, you got to just throw it to DeAndre Swift, even if it's not a screen. Get him out in the pass pattern. Just get some quick game going to Swift, to Moore. In theory, Roma Dunze, I think, will be a really effective player at after the catch with his running abilities also. And we did see Shane Waldron start to get some more quick game going. Then there is that scenario, though, based off down and distance and field position, where quick game isn't always going to be an option for you. But I did like that Shane Waldron, why he didn't recognize it maybe going into the game. You know, I think there's some question about that. But within the game, he didn't just sort of stay, as we used to watch Matt Nagy do, in this very myopic approach of, here's what I think I want to do, so I'm just going to keep doing this over and over again and bang my head against this wall. I see Shane Waldron trying different things. I suppose my bigger concern right now is not his willingness to try a variety of things, but him to figure out what works for this group and how do I get them to excel somewhere within this playbook that's our bread and butter. Because right now the Bears don't have a bread and butter on offense.
The grace. You see the grace he extends there? Time to figure things out?
Because that's his nature.
Not your nature, Dan.
Dan, not nearly as graceful. Have you ever watched him dance?
The shade, the hatred is strong.
No hatred.
It's strong.
Make sure everybody's on the same page.